Hello and welcome. I'm Andrew Merlman, and this is the Paramedic Practitioner Podcast. On our first episode, we're going to be talking about ketamine for pain control in the out-of-hospital setting. Before we do that, I want to give you a bit of background and let you know what the podcast is going to be all about. I'm a critical care paramedic and currently a first-year medical student, and I'm very passionate about improving the quality of care patients receive in the out-of-hospital setting. The podcast is meant to help paramedics and other pre-hospital providers think like practitioners and not like technicians. So this episode I'm doing solo, and we will have guests on future podcasts to discuss areas they may have expertise in and to get different viewpoints. We will discuss a variety of advanced interventions, and these things may or may not be in your protocols. So remember to follow your local protocols, but always be an advocate for change in your system. If you hear something on our podcast or somewhere else that you think would benefit your patients, don't be afraid to go to your medical directors or your system administrators and work toward making those changes. Most people are fairly receptive as long as you present them with good reasoning and some evidence to go with the suggestions you have. Let's dive into our primary topic, which is ketamine for pain management. I think pain control is one of the most important things we do for our patients in the pre-hospital setting. Unfortunately, there's a ton of variation between providers on who gets pain control, what agent they use, and deciding who gets pain control is very subjective. I think EMS in general needs to do a better job of addressing pain, and ketamine just gives us another tool to do that. It also helps us minimize our use of opioids, which may or may not be beneficial. It's unclear whether or not a few doses of fentanyl contributes to dependence. But I think avoiding opioids when appropriate may be beneficial in that, in our current era of opioid abuse and the opioid epidemic. So first thing I want to do is talk about ketamine generally and kind of dispel some myths about it. You may or may not have experience with ketamine, but I'm sure you've either heard excellent things about it or terrible things about it. It seems to be a dichotomy depending on who you talk to. You'll often hear ketamine described as a horse tranquilizer, and it certainly was one of its initial uses, but just like many other medications in veterinary medicine, they're also used in human medicine. Things like propofol, morphine, these drugs are all used in animals just like they are in humans. So just because ketamine is used as a horse tranquilizer doesn't mean it's some scary, dangerous drug. Another thing you'll hear, obviously, is that ketamine is a party drug. It's a drug of abuse, which, yes, it is a drug of abuse. People do use it to get high, as they do with multiple of the other drugs that we use, such as our opioids and benzodiazepines. So like anything, ketamine can be abused, but when used appropriately by trained medical providers, it gives us a lot of benefit. So ketamine kind of fell out of favor because I think providers were not really confident in how to use it appropriately. So they were seeing some adverse effects because they weren't dosing it appropriately, they weren't administering it appropriately, they didn't know how to manage these adverse effects when they came about. We'll get into adverse effects a little bit later, but I just wanted to address the fact that ketamine is coming back into favor, I think, because people have figured out how to use the drug appropriately and how to maximize its effectiveness and reduce the incidence of adverse events. So I think when we use a drug, it's important to understand its mechanism. Now, like with many of the drugs we use, the mechanism is, you know, slightly unclear as to how it delivers all of its effects. But the primary mechanism of ketamine is that it's an NMDA receptor antagonist. NMDA receptors are involved in regulating consciousness. So when they're firing, they are helping to keep us awake and helping to allow us to interact with the outside world. When we interfere with that, we get various levels of effects, such as sedation, as ketamine can be used as a very potent sedative. Ketamine does also have some mild opioid activity, but the opioid activity is not responsible for its analgesic effects, and ketamine does not respond to naloxone. So there really is no antidote for ketamine like you think of with an opioid, but you don't really need it, and we'll talk about how to manage some of the adverse effects from ketamine later in the episode. Okay, so how do we give ketamine to get maximum pain control without getting the undesirable effects that we talk about. So the dosing of ketamine exists on a kind of a continuum or a spectrum, and we'll provide a graphic for this in the show notes. But essentially, if you picture a spectrum, and we have on the far left side the analgesic dose range, which is going to be our lowest dosing range. And then on the far right, we have the dissociative dose range. It's our highest dosing range. And in the dissociative dose range, you're going to get complete unresponsiveness. And in the analgesic dose range, our goal is to keep our patients awake, breathing, maintaining their own airway, and interacting with us. So these effects are very different depending on the doses you use. Now, in between the analgesic and dissociative ranges, we have the recreational and then the partial dissociative ranges. These two we try to typically avoid, and I'll talk to you about how to avoid those once we talk about specific dosing. But the recreational dose range is found just above the analgesic dose range. In this area of effect, you're going to see patients are awake, they are able to interact, but they're going to seem high, essentially. They might be having some hallucinations, but they should typically be directable, and they should follow commands and be able to interact with you normally. Once we get above the recreational dose range, we end up in the partial dissociative range, and this is highly undesirable, and it can be dangerous, but if you know how to manage it and know how to avoid it, it's not a huge problem. However, this is the range that is somewhat giving ketamine a bad rap. But now we have a good understanding of how to avoid it. So just above recreational, and before we get into the dissociative range, we have partial dissociation. And what you see here is that the patient is disconnected from the outside world, but they're still awake. And they're experiencing hallucinations that may be pleasant, or they may be very unpleasant. And these unpleasant hallucinations and the unpleasant experiences are termed dysphoria, and the pleasant hallucinations are termed euphoria. Now, most patients that end up in the partial dissociative range will experience euphoria and not dysphoria. However, these dysphoric reactions can be quite traumatic for the patient and for the providers involved. So by avoiding the partial dissociative range, we avoid those effects and hopefully don't have to worry about them. So what do we do if we get a patient who ends up in the partial dissociative range? Well, the first thing to do is to try coaching them. So if you can, try to talk them down from their hallucination and try to get them to reconnect with you. If that doesn't work, you can use low doses of midazolam. So I'll usually use 1 to 2 milligrams. Actually, I've never actually had to give a drug for partial dissociation. It's not that common if you're dosing the drug appropriately. But if you do see it, 1 to 2 milligrams of midazolam IV typically helps to calm them down and get them out of that unpleasant hallucination. Now, we're going to see partial dissociation mostly when we give, when we give ketamine too fast and we're shooting for analgesia. But we may also see it if we have a fully dissociated patient. So like you get when you're doing procedural sedation or some other type of sedation where the patient's completely unresponsive. Once that drug starts to be metabolized and they start to wake up, they'll pass back through that partial dissociative phase. And in most patients, this is not an issue. They don't have an unpleasant reaction. But those are just some examples of times you might see partial dissociation. So let's talk about some specific dosing. The analgesic dose range exists between 0.1 to 0.3 milligrams per kilogram. And all of these doses are based on ideal body weight, which is estimated by the patient's height. So 0.1 to 0.3 milligrams per kilogram is where the analgesic dose range lives. On the far end of the spectrum, you can get dissociative effects at 1 milligram per kilogram and up. And we're not going to talk specifically about dissociative uses today, but just so you understand where these dose ranges lie. Just above the analgesic dose range, you're going to see the recreational dose range, and that's going to be anywhere from 0.3 to 0.5 milligrams per kilogram. So we try to avoid that dosing when we're giving this drug IV, and all these doses are in IV. The partial dissociation range is somewhere between 0.5 to 1 milligram per kilogram, and we definitely want to try to avoid that. Now, with ketamine dosing, it's important to understand that patients have varied effects to this drug. Varied reactions to this drug. So administering it appropriately and dosing safely is going to help us avoid these effects. So when we're giving ketamine for pain control, we want to give it slowly. So we're going to give it over 10 to 15 minutes. And I typically put the doses in a 50 to 100 ml bag of normal saline. And that allows me to give it nice and slowly. The reason we do that is because even if you're giving the appropriate dose, so you're in that analgesic dose range, but you give the dose too fast, that can progress the patient a little bit further than we want out of the analgesic dose range into the recreational range. And some patients can actually end up in the partial dissociative range, even with an analgesic dose. So we want to be careful to not give this drug quickly when we're shooting for pain control. So over 10 to 15 minutes is your goal for IV administration in adults and pediatrics for this drug for pain. Now we can give it IM or intranasally, and for adults and pediatrics, the dose is typically somewhere between 0.5 and 1 milligram per kilogram, but this varies quite a bit. So with pain control, no matter how you're giving it, I always use a start low and go slow dosing strategy. So I'll give a little bit and see if I get some pain relief and try to avoid those unpleasant effects. Nice thing about ketamine for pain is you don't have to wait the entire 10 to 15 minutes to see the effects you want. You're going to start to see pain relief as that drip is going in, and patients may get relief within the first 5 minutes. I've seen that happen many times. So, you know, you don't have to wait till the entire drip's in to expect pain improvement. And you can redose this as well. Typically, you want to wait about 5 to 10 minutes between when your first infusion finishes and when you start the next one. That's because you want to make sure that the patient's not going to progress past the analgesic dose range. Many patients can tolerate quite a bit of ketamine before they reach those undesirable ranges. So you just want to be constantly reassessing before you redose. So what are the benefits of using ketamine for pain control, and when would we want to use it? So ketamine is primarily beneficial when we are concerned about hemodynamics. So in many cases, ketamine will have a neutral or positive hemodynamic effect because of its mild sympathomimetic properties. Now, like any sedative or pain drug, ketamine can cause decreases in blood pressure in patients who are hemodynamically compromised. However, it is probably less likely to do so than other agents such as fentanyl or midazolam, which is sometimes used as an adjunct for pain control. So in our bleeding patients or our very medically sick patients who are hypotensive or otherwise hemodynamically compromised, ketamine is probably the best option for controlling their moderate to severe pain. The other major advantage ketamine has is that it's not an opioid. So that makes it very useful in patients who you want to avoid opioids in for whatever reason. It might be somebody who has a history of opioid dependence or is already on a large dose of opioids every day. We all see those patients who are on 30 milligrams of Dilaudid every day, and you know that your 100 micrograms of fentanyl is probably not going to touch their pain. So ketamine has a nice synergistic effect with opioids. So if you have a patient who's already on opioids, ketamine might be a really great option. The other thing to note too is that you can use ketamine with other agents or in combination with other agents, or you can use it as a sole agent. So times I might use it as a sole agent would be in a very hemodynamically compromised patient or in a patient who I don't want to cause any respiratory depression, as ketamine is more likely to maintain respiratory drive than our opioids. But you can also use it with your fentanyl or your Dilaudid, whatever opioid you choose to use, and you do get that nice synergistic effect. So I recently had a patient who had a shoulder dislocation and proximal humerus fracture who was in severe pain, and I actually started with 100 micrograms of fentanyl. It's hemodynamically stable, but I wasn't getting adequate pain control, so I added 20 milligrams of ketamine on top of that, and we got great pain relief, and we actually ended up just repeating a fentanyl dose and a ketamine dose, so we were really getting that nice synergistic effect. I've also had other patients who were multi-trauma or where I was trying to avoid respiratory depression, or, you know, really just clinical gestalt if you want to choose to use ketamine as a sole agent. And in those patients, I've seen really good results with just the ketamine. So it's just patient to patient. And once you get more experience with a drug, you can kind of start to understand how its effects look and when it's going to be most beneficial. But it's important to note that this is a safe drug, and when you're dosing it appropriately and administering it appropriately, you should see some really good results. So that's all I have for you today on ketamine for pain management. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, please feel free to email me or find me on Twitter at amerlman. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you next time.